You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Good morning. Welcome to this week's edition of the Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio Show on Community Radio, Radical Radio 3CR. We're proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio. Thank you to Democracy Now for the last hour of Current Affairs. My name's Chris. And Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio, we're a weekly program on 3CR Radical Radio about bikes, cycling, active transport, micro-mobility, getting around without a combustion engine, and lots of stories. And today, I'm going to be talking to Alice Humble from Ballarat and her journey and her family's journey to using a cargo bike. And as we touch lightly upon in the interview about cargo bikes and micro-mobility are having a moment, and kind of got to extrapolate that a bit further. Step change. Is there one brewing? Can we make this less than a thing that's happening into an actual change? And again, you know, when you're going about your daily thing of either, you know, the school drop-off or getting to where you need to go in the morning, you think, oh, this is impossible because it's just so dominant upon a particular form of transport. Well, allow yourself to open up and have a listen to what Alice has to say. Again, as I've said on the show many times over the years, cargo bikes are great. And e-bikes are even better, but there's also a price point and accessibility issue with these things. So, again, if you're aware of all the stuff you can get for an EV and the rebates and the stuff that, the selling points of those, why can't state and federal governments pivot to doing a similar thing? And not because it's a nice thing to do, it's because actually we need to, and points at all these other externalities, we really do need to change our transport priorities. And without going into that massive issue, let's get into the interview with Alice.
Hi, I'm Alice Humble. I'm the voice, I suppose you could say, behind Life on a Cargo Bike on Instagram. A teacher and mother who lives in Ballarat, and we basically use a cargo bike every day instead of a car. Sometimes still use a car, but ultimately use a cargo bike to do everything and anything in our life.
To someone who may not be aware of, you can use something other than a car to get around. Okay, this is kind of like a very big question, but how can we break this down? Of how did you first get interested, or what was the cue for you to consider something other than a car for transporting your littlies around?
Well, this journey started before I even knew what a cargo bike was, and that was I was a cycling or bike rider commuter since my first year of teaching, pretty much. So for the last sort of 13 years, I've ridden my bike to school, and that was just on a normal push bike. I'd wear a backpack, and it wasn't very far, I admit. It was maybe a 10-minute ride, the first school that I taught at. Then along came children, and I suddenly wanted to think, okay, well, I still want to ride. I still want to make this part of my daily routine. It's good for my exercise. It's, you know, helping me reach sort of the national physical activity guidelines in terms of half an hour of, I used to be a PE teacher, half an hour of moderate to vigorous physical activity a day. And so I thought that's an easy way to tick that off. But children came along, so I thought, what's the solution? We initially went just with a trailer, tacked that onto the back, got a baby seat on the back of the bike, and that was okay. It was a bit hard when the headwinds were blowing around Lake Wendouree and it was pouring with rain and it was lugging up this thing up some pretty big hills. But we persisted and just kept doing it, and then baby two came along and I thought, I don't like the idea of them being in the trailer. I don't like them behind me. I don't like them being so low to the ground. And so that's when, this was probably 2022, when we sort of started thinking, okay, let's look more into this cargo bike option. And, yeah, went and tried a few down in Melbourne and realised, yeah, this is the solution. This is going to allow us to commute more than one child. It's going to allow us to use pedal assist, and so those really hard slogs in the middle of winter, headwind blowing a gale around Lake Wendouree, sort of horizontal rain, all of a sudden becomes a lot more manageable when you've got that turbo in your back pocket. And so, yeah, that's where it really stemmed from. It came from, as parents, any parent will know, you don't want to always lose your previous life when you have kids. And that, for me, what part of that was not losing that bike ride to work. And so that's where our cargo bike journey started, really, about maintaining a part of my daily routine that I just didn't want to let go. And for a while there, I did have to drive. I got that experience when my littlest one was still not quite ready for the cargo bike. We still got that experience of driving. We tried to do park and walk, so we didn't have to deal with the hellishness of drop off at daycare, where there's parents lined up for a good 100 meters or fighting for car parks, and just didn't want to be part of that. I think I've mentioned sort of the physical side of things, but also just the stress of turning up to a childcare centre, looking for a park, trying to rush in, get in and out. It's just such a relief not have to not have to do that ultimately. So, yeah, that's where it started, and here we are sort of a year on with our Urban Arrow, and, yeah, we can't imagine life without it, really.
There's this thing, like, I've never gone through it, but I watch it, is of the school pickup down here in around Melbourne, anywhere else in the world. They describe exactly what you said. It was like this huge line and intensity around getting your kids to and from. Has this kind of helped you kind of diffuse a bit of tension and stress in your day?
I think, yeah, ultimately, like that ride in the morning, I mean, I have to admit, still getting two young children into a cargo bike can be stressful. Mm. Getting out of a house on time is definitely stressful. But as soon as you sort of start pedaling and we get sort of on a little downhill that we have on our route, we sort of all just take a collective breath and we can start just observing the things around us. And I think that's the one thing that I've, well, not the one thing, one of the things that I've noticed is that it just opens up conversations with, well, only one of my, I've got a four-year-old and a one-year-old, so the four-year-old's a lot more articulate than the one-year-old, but just those conversations that you can have that can take your mind away from that stress of getting out in the morning, whether it's the bin trucks going around and collecting the rubbish for the week, or it's roadworks that you spot. There's just little moments where you just think, oh, this is so much more pleasant for me to be having a meaningful conversation with my children rather than rushing in the car.
The biggest weapons fair in the Southern Hemisphere is coming to Naarm. Land forces will run at the Melbourne Convention Centre. All arms dealers will be there. So will we. From the 8th to the 14th of September, we are mobilising to disrupt land forces. This is where the generals, weapons CEOs, diplomats and defence ministers come together to do the deals that end in genocide. We plan to shut that shit down. Elbit, Lockheed, Hanwha, Boeing, Thales, Nyer, the biggest weapon makers in the world, will be there to grab their piece of the genocide pie. Join the collaboration to disrupt land forces. We support all cultures, genders, ages, ability, and protest styles. Connect with us. Disruptlandforces.org. Join the mobilisation from the 8th to the 14th of September to stop arming Israel and put a stop to this genocide shock. Disrupt Land Forces is a 3CR supporter.
The most dangerous part of my trip is the school zone. As being a teacher, often we get there before the school zone becomes an issue, but on one of my days off, we're often driving through the school zone at about 10 to 9, and they're the moments where I almost get hit, or people don't see us, or people turn in front of us. So while there's the tension that I release from riding, ultimately there is tension still in being a bike rider in Ballarat because of the infrastructure that's lacking. So that's a whole different sort of side of it. It isn't sunshine and roses and rainbows. Like, it is still an intense experience sometimes because of infrastructure or lack thereof.
That's a very big one, because, you know, the way that cars absolutely dominate every bit of conversation and every activity, we're finding it, like, you know, I could point at, you know, yourself, of any discussion where we're trying to look at an alternative and it gets turned into something stupid. What you're doing, and I'm watching so many other parents, is breaking down these conversations and doing a different process where we don't need to feel as hyper-stressed. Simple things. What's some of the simple things you reckon could happen around school drop-off to make it easier for if you're taking the bubs on a cargo bike or something like a turn or whatever? What sort of things would you think around an area would make it easier?
Being inspired by school streets in Paris, and I know Bicycle Network have sort of got their open streets, which is sort of like a version of those school streets, but and I suppose it comes down to council will, but recognising that if we can even close off parts of streets or encourage sort of park and walk sort of drop-offs around schools, that here's a park sort of, I don't know, even if it's 200 metres away from the school, drop your kids off here, and that's a nice safe route for them to walk to school. Little initiatives like that, I think. Also just enforcement of the rules of the road, like the number of people that double park or do U-turns over double lines, just little things like that where, as you say, the stress of getting kids to school can make parents take risks that they aren't fully appreciating the danger that they're causing. I think obviously 40Ks as well, I think like obviously the great work that the Yarra Council are doing in Melbourne, 40Ks isn't slow enough either for schools. I think that's the research, and I mean the terrible statistics around the likelihood of a vulnerable road user dying at 60K, 50K, 40K, and then down, is it 10% or something when it gets down to, can't quite remember. But that should just be everywhere as a short-term measure, ultimately 30Ks around schools where kids are kids. Like, they will run out in front of traffic. They will make decisions, and it's sort of, we're putting all that pressure on children and students to be mindful of their own safety when actually the adults in the situation are the ones who are posing the danger. And so reducing speed, encouraging people to park and walk that final journey. And then I suppose just education isn't enough, is it? We sort of talk about speeds, we talk about safety around schools, but when you're a parent and you're stressed and you're trying to get to your job on time, education doesn't cut it. We need the infrastructure in place to force those parents to slow down. And that could be, I can't imagine in any country around the world where that would be seen as a negative thing. I think we need to prioritise child safety, and we do in so many other areas. This just seems like a logical next step for our politicians and councillors.
Because it's like, it's only so much the soft side of advocacy for infrastructure can be done. What we need is to teach and put in safe systems 30K is part of that. Road infrastructure is part of that. Being aware that there's other types of road users is part of that. The school drop-off is just a microcosm of a whole bunch of things that are fascinating in the active transport space.
Want to know what happened at the People's Blockade of the world's largest coal port? Come along to a special 3CR screening of The First Wave, the short film that explains all, and be inspired to join the blockade this year. Revisit the epic event and hear how this incredible people-powered protestival came together. Join us on Wednesday, 18th September at 7 p.m. at Ceres. Head to Rising Tide Victoria Facebook page to RSVP and to get all the details. Rising Tide Victoria is a 3CR supporter.
The 90s had a car that ran electric, they held back the tech. Shit. Now it's gotten hectic. They can't.
On to the bike. What sort of cargo bike have you got?
So we have an Urban Arrow, which is front load cargo bike, which is terminology that I didn't know existed probably 3 years ago. So we went for the Urban Arrow. We went in when we started looking, we were thinking just a long tail. Jürgen out at Dutch Cargo sort of talked us through the benefits of a front-load cargo bike. And going back to 2021, when I started riding with my eldest with the trailer, I would, hands down, in that moment, if I could turn back time, I would have not even entertained the idea of a trailer. I would have gone straight for a front-load cargo bike because it has just been... It's just transformed my experience as a rider, but also for my children as well, because we've got the rain cover, they feel secure. It's just, we couldn't have chosen a better bike for our needs ultimately. So, yeah, so we've got an Urban Arrow, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and you probably could cart around a fair bit in that besides the kids too, couldn't you?
So this morning I rode to school without my children. My husband did drop off this morning. And it's sort of a funny thing to ride around with a giant bike with not much in the front. And I've heard some people compare it to what it's like feeling silly driving a car around with no passengers. And you think of the number of times that you drive a car and you're the sole occupant, there's nothing in the boot, you're just going to, whether you're going to work, whether you're going to the supermarket or whether you're just going to the doctors, like there's no need for the amount of space that you have in that moment. And so I try and reframe it in my mind. That's exactly the same for me. People wouldn't bat an eyelid at a mother driving an empty car. And so there should be nothing weird about me driving an empty cargo bike. But I have my lunch, I have a change of clothes, I have lots of things that I can keep in there and I don't have to worry about it. I think the beauty of a cargo bike, particularly as a slightly disorganized mother, is that I can just chuck everything in. It's a bucket. I don't have to worry about packing panniers and weight distribution and all those sort of things. It's a bit like the metaphorical boot of a sort of a parent's car. It's messy, it's disorganized, but it does the job it's intended to do, which is to carry cargo, whether that's children or shopping or the latest hauls at the op shop. It can carry plenty of things.
And that's the beauty of like the cargo bike. It's like I hate to say this term, but it's like a mini car with none of the drawbacks. Oops, I've said it now. But do you find there's the all important, are we saving money? Is it economical for the household budget?
Yeah, I did. I chatted to an ABC journalist a couple of weeks ago around sort of this idea of bikes being a solution to cost of living. And as I mentioned before, I've been riding for sort of 13 years and money was probably always just a fringe benefit. It was more for me, it was about, and I know it's a BP sort of marketing tool, but it was about me reducing my personal footprint, carbon footprint. It was about exercise. And so the money side has only ever been sort of a benefit that we've enjoyed. I think I put in, before I spoke to that journalist, I put in like a calculator of like fuel costs. And I think I might have done it wrong, but it's probably saved us about $800 sort of over the first year of travel. And that's pretty crude. It's just the number of kilometres on the bike with the sort of average cost of petrol, and it spits out a number. That's not insignificant for people who are dealing with rate increases, that are, you know, dealing with price gouging supermarkets. Like, any money that we can sort of eke back from those corporations, and ultimately the car industry isn't out to benefit us, it's to benefit the car industry. So I think that money side of things is something that I've probably appreciated more. It is a viable solution. Well, not a viable solution, but it is probably something that governments can start to think, well, it's not only about climate change, it's not only about the health crisis that we're, or the healthcare crisis we're currently in. This could also be a solution for the cost of living crisis. So I think that's an important factor for us to consider as well and promote. And then, but it all comes down to the infrastructure, doesn't it? Because you can have the will, you can have the desire to cycle, but unless you feel safe doing it, not even the prospect of saving $800 a year is necessarily going to make you take that risk to ride.
Consumer law touches on many aspects of what we do every day. Consumer Action Law Centre has lawyers, financial counsellors, and policy experts who specialise in issues such as unfair contract terms and deceptive or dodgy business practices, like excessive pricing or irresponsible lending. Consumer Action Law Centre provides free legal information and advice and pursues litigation on behalf of consumers experiencing disadvantage across Victoria. Consumer Action Law Centre currently focuses on getting justice for people who have been sold lemon cars, ripped off by insurance companies, scammed and denied help from their bank, or refused hardship concessions from telecommunications and energy companies. Find out how Consumer Action Law Centre can help you at consumeraction.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Yeah, exactly, because this is the problem that's come up in advocacy all the time. It's like, again, as I said earlier in part of the chat, there's always kind of like this soft politics of behaviour change. But when it comes down to the nub of, we are going to actually change some infrastructure or make uniform speeds so every road user is safe, this is where kind of we get this pushback that's out of balance. And I think really with the, you know, kind of like the last five, if less, years of e-bikes coming to the fore, we could see an absolute game changer. They really are making huge differences to people, and it's up to whatever level of government, all three levels of government, to see that there's a huge opportunity here. Because, you know, Tasmanian government did a thing on e-bikes. There's been a few things around Australia. There's the cargo bike lending library in Canberra. There's a few things around Melbourne. But if you look at, you know, we could crunch numbers on this, but I'm speaking very generally of your EV rebate sort of stuff, compared that to how many Urban Arrows or Terns or whatever, insert brand here, you could get for a conventional car, and then extrapolate that a bit further. Okay, I'm not an analyst, but we could really do some amazing stuff. But it's up to the political will to do it. So I really think e-bikes could have a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it opens up for us. The e-bike was never necessarily about making the commute achievable. It was about making the commute more enjoyable. Yes. But for some people, it just makes that 20k ride suddenly a viable option with having an e-bike. It would take too long with just a standard bike, but it just opens up those opportunities, or even longer. Like 20k's isn't that long in the grand scheme of things, but the opportunity to promote, and not just e-bikes, but whether it's electric scooters. I know they've had a bit of a moment in the city of Melbourne, obviously, recently. Yeah. Embracing those active transport options, I think, as you say, sort of think, oh, is it Copenhagen? And past Copenhagen Maersk talks about who can't afford to invest in cycling, who can't afford to invest in active transport, because the alternative in car-dependent infrastructure is just so expensive and such a waste of money. So for our councillors and our MPs to be sort of kicking that can down the road in terms of promoting and funding active transport appropriately, really, with the number of budgets that we see struggling, whether it's Victorian Labor or Federal Labor, like, they're struggling with their budgets, and it just makes more sense to spend that money more wisely on active transport. It's sort of countries around the world or cities around the world approving that, and it makes me think, well, why aren't they? What am I missing? Is it they're worried about the public? Is it they're worried about, you know, losing elections? And I suppose ultimately that's what it comes down to, but
it's pretty.
We've got to be more hopeful than that. I think we've got
to
be.
I think
more
we have productive. To. We have to be more hopeful than that, because, you know, the things with the e-scooters is the issue being it's a new technology and people get all perturbed about actually old problems that can have new solutions. Like the e-scooter thing just needs to be rejigged, a little bit more geofencing, and we're fine. We, you know, the thing's already speed limited. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that gets brought up into the space, which are furfies and what about isms.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
So in closing, what would you say, another one of those big question but short answer sort of things, of what would you say to a parent of little leagues? Because as they get older, it'll be a different paradigm altogether.
It makes me think, you said, big question, short answer. Apologies, my answer probably won't be that short, as you probably gathered. A colleague turned up on her brand new cargo bike on Tuesday, first time she'd ever ridden it. She'd been thinking about it for a little while. She turned up with her long tail cargo bike with her 2-year-old daughter on the back. And she said, I just feel so good. She felt it was only a 13-minute ride. And she said, the start to my day has just been so different, so much more positive. And I think that's what we need to sort of get the message out there, is that this is good for you. It's good for parents. It's good for your well-being. It's good for the streets that we want our children to grow up in. And I think that's where sort of my advocacy has come from, as it's been sort of turbocharged by being a parent. Because ignorance is bliss. I sort of didn't think anything about riding on a 60K road when I was riding my bike to work all those years ago. I don't want my children riding on a 60K road. Even I try to avoid it here and now. So we want, as parents, we want what's best for our children. And the best thing that we can do to make our streets safer, to make our cities more livable, is to reduce the number of cars that we're utilising. And I just see taking up a cargo bike, an e-bike, is just a really visible way to do that. But also, it's just a really enjoyable thing to do, like quality time with my children. It's just the physical benefits and the health benefits to us as a family are really significant, but then the broader picture of this can really change what our cities look like and make our streets a lot safer for our children, I think could really sort of get parents over the line in terms of this is going to make a significant difference in your children's life. And that's ultimately what we want as parents. We want them to be healthy. We want them to be independent. We want them to have autonomy. So I see this as a long-term project. I want my kids, when they're teenagers, when they can ride their own bikes, to know that they can get to rowing training, or that they can get to the gym or ballet or wherever they're going by themselves, and they don't need to wait for me. They don't need to wait for that taxi of mum and dad. And so that's sort of the long-term picture of where I see I want parents to be thinking, where they can get. But the short-term is it's fun. Your kids love it, and it's making our city safer. So that's my message to parents. If you're thinking about it, just give it a go. You won't regret it.
And how can people watch you lead by example? You know, where can people catch up with your journeys?
So if you wanted to follow our adventures, you can follow us at Life on a Cargo Bike. So we're in Ballarat, so on Wadawurrung country. We've got an Instagram page. We have had a blog. We were brand ambassadors for Dutch Cargo for the first 12 months. So there are some blogs related to that that you can check out if you're wanting some advice on the childcare run or why we bought an Urban Arrow. But Life on a Cargo Bike is where we post lots of pictures, whether it's swans around Lake Wendouree or sort of things that we've carried home from the op shop. There's, and slightly more political recently. In the lead up to October elections, obviously, we've got to think about who we're electing as our councillors. So a bit more Ballarat-based sort of advocacy around what to vote for and things like that. That's where we are. And we ride in the rain, despite what most Ballarat people would think. For who on earth would ride in the rain? We ride in the rain. It's been a bit windy. That's changed things a little bit with the severe weather warnings of late. But if it's raining, we still ride. So come and check out our wintry, weathery Ballarat posts and say hello.
Thank you too, Alice, for making time to have a chat about Life on a Cargo Bike, and should have the podcast and on demand should be available even faster. So yeah, go to 3cr.org.au/yarrabike or yarrabug and listen to the podcast, and we'll have all the podcast description in there as well if you're listening back. And don't forget that 3CR, we are, our presenters are all volunteers. So go to 3cr.org.au. Make sure you subscribe, donate, or look for an upcoming fundraiser. Up next is Women on the Line, an episode of Women on the Line, followed by Black Block.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.